You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
In dreams he came.
Welcome to the 41st edition of the Stone Tapes. Joining us this month, we've got George Mann.
Hello.
On the telephone, we've got Patricia H. Ash.
Hiya.
Hi, Patricia. In the studio, we have the lovely Becky Morgan Phillips joining us today.
Hello.
And, of course, later on, there'll be Robin Pierce and our Alex Lefchuk, our producer. And what it's that time of year at the moment, so what should we be talking about? Of course, Halloween, which is just around the corner. So we'll be talking a lot today about our favourite scary movies, but first, George is going to do In This Month.
In This Month. We've got some good facts for you this time. So, October, spooky October, and we're going to start with something appropriately Headless Horseman kind of feel. 400 years ago this month, on the 29th of October 1618, Sir Walter Raleigh was beheaded for allegedly conspiring against James I of England. So there you go. 200 years ago, on the 20th of October 1818, the United States and the United Kingdom managed to make a trade agreement of sorts, which we could really do with at the moment, I think, to settle the border for Canada on the 49th parallel.
Wow. 200 years ago.
200 years, yeah. Absolutely.
That's amazing.
We're going to leap forward another 100 years. This is a good one, favourite one of mine. World War One.
Yeah.
Famous writer, T.E. Lawrence.
Yes.
Lawrence of Arabia. Led Arab forces to capture Damascus. That was the 1st of October 1918. 100 years ago.
I can't believe it's 100 years. Mm. My goodness. Did you know that, Patricia? It's 100 years ago, Lawrence of Arabia.
I did not. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the schedule, so I'm cheating.
But almost...
I knew that 2 minutes ago. But that's
almost
the,
out
the
of living memory it. Now. You think about it, First World War. This one probably won't mean much to you, Patricia, but 60 years ago, the first broadcast of a television show, a sport-related television show called Grandstand in the UK, 11th of October, 1958.
That's a long time, that's been
That is
really,
a long time.
That's really...
With a famous theme tune that I'm not going to sing.
Yes, no, I'm not either. But I can hear it in my head.
10 years later, and this seems mad that this is 50 years ago as well, police and protesters clashed in an anti-Vietnam War protest outside the embassy of the United States in London.
And again, to think that that's 50 years ago, it feels like so little time ago. I think having been born sort of after that and growing up with it, knowing about it, it just feels like still part of the generation I'm in. So it's strange.
It's really fresh, isn't it, for you know,
I suppose that's what
that generation I suppose, that came afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much so.
Yeah, and this is one that actually, out of all of them, this is the one that scared me the most when you realise 10 years ago, I'm going to get the specific date, on the 18th of October, so almost exactly 10 years, 10 years tomorrow, on the Russell Brand show, they broadcast an episode during which, there's the Grandstand theme tune.
There it is.
Good work, Alex. yes, the Russell Brand show, Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross did a series of prank phone calls to Andrew Sachs, which caused a big media furore when it was deemed very inappropriate.
That feels like 2 years ago.
That's the thing. That's 10 years. I know, it's really scary, isn't it?
It's terrifying, really, how time flies.
I know. Just tonight, my wife was saying, best I think about Christmas. I thought, what?
Yes.
What?
But yes,
oh no!
It's wrong. Time is speeding up. I'm sure time is speeding up.
It feels like it to me. I think my mother always said that once you hit 21, time definitely sped up after that. And I think she was right.
Yes, unfortunately, having children does it. I think.
It's like we're rushing all the time from one thing to another, aren't we?
Yeah.
So thank you for that, George, and we're going to go right over to Patricia's corner now for Patricia's review. What are you going to review for us today, Patricia?
Well, I've been watching a lot of Netflix, and one of the brand new original shows on Netflix is The Curious Creations of Christine McConnell.
Oh, I saw that pop up today. I'm going to check that out. Go on, tell us all about it.
I've never seen anything quite like it. It's part cooking show and part creepy Muppet sitcom.
Oh.
Suddenly I'm very interested.
Yeah. So Christine McConnell, who is a sugar artist and cake artist, she makes really cool stuff out of stuff that you can eat. She apparently lives in a super spooky house with some creepy creatures. There's a ghost that lives in her mirror. She's raised a raccoon from the dead. So that lives with her. Her name is Rose. She's got a cat who's a mummy, appropriately a sphinx cat. There's like a werewolf dog thing and something creepy that lives in her basement. We haven't got a look at it yet, but it's got really big yellow eyes.
Wow.
And there's a tentacle monster in her refrigerator and something else in her closet. It's cool. Part of the show is her explaining how to make bones out of modeling chocolate, a pretzel stick, and some peanut butter.
Wow.
Wow. So are the...
So delicious.
The animals you mentioned, are they the Muppet-type creatures?
Yeah. Yeah, they're all Muppet-type creatures.
Wow.
That sounds fun.
So she'll explain how to, like, make a cake that looks like a house, and meanwhile the Muppet-type creatures are having some sort of plot thing going on. Like, there's one where they try and kill the neighbor. and it's really interesting, and it's Halloween-y in the best, most fun way.
I think we all need to watch that this month.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
We need to have a look.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's only 6 episodes, and they're only about 30 minutes long, so it won't take you very long to watch all of them.
Wow.
What sort of age is it aimed at? Is it like a family show, or is it very definitely an adult show?
There are some adult themes, so I would recommend it for teenagers or adults. Is there are some sexual themes in it,
okay.
Weirdly. Coming from one of the Muppets, the little undead raccoon is...
Well, Miss Piggy was always a bit that way inclined as well.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so different. I mean, when it popped up today, yeah. I saw all of these little... It looked like there was some kind of cooking thing going on the you know, the thumbnail shot. But I thought, oh, it's probably some kind of new supernatural series or something. But actually, since I love cooking, I think I'm going to have to check that out as well.
That sounds
what do you
brilliant.
Think of it, Becky?
Oh, yeah.
It sounds very interesting. I have to peruse Netflix again. It's where I find the best things, just scrolling through Netflix, looking at the sci-fi shows.
That's what I like to do, too.
Yeah.
Right, thank you so much, Patricia. And we'll catch up with you again.
You are welcome.
We'll catch up with you again next week.
close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. Stenches in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Well, you can't have a Halloween edition of the Stone Tapes without a bit of MJ.
Gotta love him. Well.
And Vincent Price too. Absolutely brilliant. One of my favourite songs of all time, that really. And it's one of those songs that you just always remember the video, regardless.
It's like the music video, isn't it?
It's just the best music. It really is. I think we have Robin now joining us from... how are you, Robin? How's the view from your castle today?
Oh, the bats are flying in the belfry today, I can tell you.
And how is Wales? What's the weather like? We always have to ask you that.
We had a very, very stormy weekend. It knocked one of our patio chairs over. It was that bad.
Oh, gosh. Blimey. Sounds a bit rough. Sounds a bit rough.
Oh, it was.
Patio chairs going over. It's terrible.
We're fighting for our lives up here.
Well, Robin,
no, it's actually quite dry at the moment, so we'll take that as a bonus.
Good. Well, I'll let you know who's in the studio today. We've got with us Becky Morgan Phillips.
Hello.
So Becky is a bit of a sci-fi fan, so she's probably going to enjoy talking to you about Venom, because I believe she's seen it as well.
Yes.
Oh, I'm out of my league now, aren't I?
And of course George is here, and myself and Alex. So welcome again to the show, and tell us all about Venom.
Venom. Right, correct me if I get any of this wrong, me and George. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Venom. It's an interesting case. This is Venom's second movie appearance. We saw him back in Superman? Spider-Man.
Well, I tricked you on that one.
Right. Brainiac is second movie appearance. Right, he was in Spider-Man 3 a few years ago in what was a little more accurate telling of his origin. See, Venom as a character started off as Spider-Man's suit. What happened was Marvel Comics ran a series called The Secret Wars, where a selection of their heroes went to battle a selection of villains on a far distant planet. Spider-Man's suit got damaged, and he found this alien goo, which fitted his body and gave him unlimited webbing. It was black in color, because they wanted to kind of reinvent the character at that point as well. So the heroes won. They came back to Earth. Spider-Man had a brand new black suit, which the fans hated. So they needed to find a way of getting Spider-Man back into his familiar red and blue underoos. So they had the alien explained as a symbiote, which kind of morphed with Spider-Man, knew all his secrets, and started to influence his behavior in not a good way. So, eventually, they found a way to get this symbiote off Spider-Man because it was possessing him. Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four discovered that sonic waves were the thing to do it, and they put it in a jar until it escaped and found disgruntled journalist Eddie Brock. Now, the suit and Brock then morphed, and the thing is, the suit knows Venom knows all of Peter Parker's secrets, so he becomes a major villain. So, we saw him in Spider-Man 3, but there was too much going on in that film, really, to give Venom the justifiable story that he had. There were too many flaws, the addition of two major supervillains in Sandman and Venom, so it all fell a bit flat. Now we have the interesting challenge. How do you feature Venom, a Spider-Man villain, in a film when Spider-Man is, well, we all remember the end of Infinity War, don't we?
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, then why not?
I haven't seen it.
I'm so
spoiled. No spoilers. No spoilers.
No.
There's always one, and it's always her, isn't it?
It's always me.
So, it's not a Marvel Universe movie made by Marvel Studios. It's actually made by Sony, who hold the rights to Spider-Man, but have traded off with Marvel Studios to have the character in their universe. So we've got a Venom movie without Spider-Man. So even the origin has had to change.
Interesting.
It's not a bad retelling, but it's Venom, but not as we know him. What happens is that a spaceship lands, crashes actually, and there are various alien samples on board. One of them becomes Venom, makes its way by transferring from body to body from Malaysia, where the spaceship lands, over to San Francisco. Now, this is a good idea, not setting it in Spider-Man's home city, because then they don't have to explain why the two characters don't meet.
Yeah, that's good.
So that works quite well. So if we do have a Spider-Man Venom face-to-face matchup in the future, we know, you know, they can all be explained. Tom Hardy as Venom.
Tom Hardy, I love
very,
Tom
Hardy. Very good performance.
He's so amazing.
It's an excellent performance. Not once did his American accent grate on me. They soften up the Venom character a little bit from the complete psychotic menace that he is to being kind of an anti-hero. He does awful things like eat people.
Oh, you just answered the question I was going to ask about whether he was still a bad guy. But obviously...
Well, eat people who really deserve to be eaten.
Oh, that's all right then.
You know, he's threatening to snack on somebody's kidneys and he'll bite somebody's head off. And he really will do it.
Well, the thing is, we all like Hannibal Lecter, don't we, in the same
Absolutely.
Way?
Absolutely. We love still to hate like him. Our Freddy Kruegers, our Hannibal Lecters, and, of course, now our Venoms. You find yourself rooting for him. There's a bit of comedy that also, curiously enough, and I'm a Marvel Comics purist, did not grate, where Eddie Brock can hear Venom's voice in his head telling him to do something, and of course Eddie himself is vocalizing his own counter-argument, so the people are thinking that he's talking to himself. So that works quite well. The effects are superb. Well-rendered CGI. He is exactly as artist Todd McFarlane drew him, apart from the white spider symbol, but we all know why that is the case. I would say that's the highest praise I can give him. I think there's going to be a sequel, because there is a very interesting sting. There are two stings. One is relevant and one is not. Do you want me to go into these?
Do we want spoilers? Is it going to be a spoiler?
It's not actually a spoiler.
Okay, yeah, let's go into
it's
it.
It's a portent of things to come.
Right.
It'll be trailer. Carnage.
It is. It's carnage. Eddie Brock goes to a prison to do one of his interviews as a journalist at the end, and he's meeting up with Cletus Kasady, who happens to be Carnage, another symbiote, but a far more psychotic one. And it's Woody Harrelson with a red wig. And he looks almost Joker-like in his dementia.
dear.
And he even references the fact that this is going to be carnage. And that is a sequel. I don't want to wait a couple of years. I want to see it now. The other Sting is an animated clip from an animated Spider-Man movie that's coming out, which I felt kind of dulled the impact of the first one because, you know, you've just seen Carnage. Why would you want to see a cartoon, however well rendered it is? So overall, I would give this a 7 out of 10.
What about you, Becky? Because you've just seen it recently. Would you agree with that?
I think, yeah, I agree with a lot of points that you were saying. I did very much like Tom Hardy as Venom. I think he sort of suited the role very, very well. And the acting in it overall, I believe, was very good. I was interested between sort of the discrepancies between what critics were saying and what audiences were saying about the movie. Because obviously it's gotten like 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, but at the same time, the audience score is like 88%. So, I mean, it just goes to show. But I would say probably about a 7 or an 8 as well. Yeah. It was not the best superhero movie I've seen, but I did very much like it.
Right. Becky, what is the best superhero movie you've ever
seen? Oh, I don't even know. You're putting me on the spot now. I did really like Avengers Infinity War, though.
You keep putting me on the spot in the studio, so I'm doing it to one of you.
Yeah, I did very much like Infinity War. I very much liked Infinity War.
Infinity War
Thanos.
Is my film of the year. Absolutely my film of the year.
I like Watchmen.
For me, it's Spider-Man Homecoming still.
Really?
I just love Spider-Man. And it's the first time I felt they got him right on screen.
I've kind of lost the plot a bit with the Spider-Man films recently. I saw the Tobey Maguire ones, but I've just not... this new reboot.
I think it's because there's been so many reincarnations of it.
Has.
So there was Tobey Maguire, then Andrew Garfield, and now Tom Holland's come in.
Right. Oh, it's Tom Holland,
like the
is it?
In the Andrew Garfield ones, but I didn't like the fact that everything that went on in New York was all the Oscorp Corporation's fault.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, this won't work. But I do wish they'd gone ahead with that Sinister Six movie. Where six of the supervillains team up.
Well, stay with us, Robin. We'll have a little bit of Killing Kiss, Lindsay Gold.
Good. It's a dark, dismal night. I'm fatal company.
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at superhero IRL. Thanks so much. Hi, this is Chase Masterson, and you're listening to Sam Stone and Friends with the Stone Tapes on Siren FM.
And, of course, if you want to catch up with the gorgeous Chase Masterson this weekend, she'll be at Destination Star Trek in at Birmingham NEC. And I think I might be popping along there myself to say hello. Now, we're going to be talking a new feature this month, in lieu of David not being with us. So we're not doing David's Film of the Month. This week, we are going to do Let's Talk Series. And this new feature is basically our exploration of all of the wonderful goodies we keep finding on streaming services. And I won't just mention my usual one. There are lots of them out there. But in particular, we've been watching The Haunting of Hill House. So, Robin, I think you started this series before I did. I've managed to cram in three episodes this week. What's your thoughts on the show?
Love it, love it, love it, and finally, love it.
Wow.
Because I made the mistake of flicking through a streaming service and thinking, well, I've seen the film, what's this about? So, and I switched it on, and everybody had gone to bed, apart from me, and I was sitting here alone in the dark, and it's very unusual, after decades of watching horror movies, for anything, especially a TV series, where you think that things are going to be toned down just a little bit, to make me feel actually a little bit uneasy.
Mm.
And it had a very disquieting kind of effect where you know something's about to happen and there's a build-up. It gets right everything, controversial statements coming up, that movies like The Conjuring and Annabelle get completely wrong.
Oh, really? Ooh, that is controversial. Ooh, interesting.
Well, those films, they annoy me because it's a quick, startling blast of noise.
Yeah.
This, you know, you saw, for example, one of the children, and I'm trying to do this in a spoiler-free way, mention an apparition that she was seeing, and you only saw a brief glimpse, but when you hear a small child talk about the lady with a bent neck.
Yes, yes.
You're thinking,
ooh.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that.
I do not like the sound of that. To give you a quick summary of what it's about, The Haunting of Hill House takes place in two timelines. One is set in a flashback in the summer of 1992, when Hugh and Olivia Crane temporarily move into an old mansion. And there's a series of things happen at that which shape the future, shall we say, of the children that were in the house at that time. And so, and it then flashes forward to the present day, where the oldest child, Stephen Crane, played by Michael Huseman, he is a grown man now. He's an author, and he's famous for writing about his experiences of the house. So you've got this whole juxtaposition of the past and the present, and the past is definitely informing the behaviour of each of them in the present, which is very interesting.
Very different from the original movie and the I guess, from the book.
Yes, because it would have been just at the time, wouldn't it, when the actual haunting was going on with the movie. Remind me of the movie.
To be, because the movie's just the one story. They needed the last, you know, at least one season. I wouldn't be surprised if it runs on.
I think it will go. I think this has got potential to go on for a while.
Because that's what I was wondering, is how they turned that story into a recurring TV show.
Exactly what piqued my curiosity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I love the movie, but it is a very self-contained story about some people in a house.
That's right.
And at the end of the story, it's done.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, is this a sequel to that, or are they just going to try and draw that out over
In many ways, it probably is like a sequel to it. You know, it's because it is expanding the story quite significantly, isn't it, Robin?
Yes, it is.
And
in a convincing way.
Yes, I actually love it. David found it a bit slow the first episode, but I think it's really warming up lovely on episode 3 I'm on now, and there's quite some dark moments in there, to say the least. It's very nice. saying it's nice. It's great.
My go-to horror series, because I dropped The Walking Dead last year.
It's not a horror series.
Nothing ever happened.
Nothing happened.
You know, the survivors will rise.
Yeah.
And we waited and we waited and we waited. The last really good episode was Negan's arrival. I watched the rest of that season, and they were gearing up for war, which...
I think I dropped out at the beginning of season 3.
I was in and out of The Walking Dead, and I've very much been out of it for a couple of years now, because the same things happened again and again and again.
There wasn't enough zombies in it, in my opinion. Like, it was too much angst.
Yeah. You could go anywhere. The biggest bit was when they started killing people.
Can you? It's got to be about the survivors, unless you're talking the Santa Clarita Diet or iZombie.
Yes, which is brilliant.
I love the Santa Clarita Diet. I still adore iZombie.
iZombie's brilliant. I've not watched Santa Clarita.
I think iZombie is very sort of accessible for all ages, I think, as well.
I think there's
a little bit sex in there, but not too much.
I think the there was one episode I was watching with my teenage son, which was where she'd eaten the brain of kind of a dominatrix, and made him a bit uncomfortable, and he left the room for a while. I think it's probably only because he was watching it with his dad.
Yeah,
you know?
Probably. I'm going to off streaming
for a second and ask generally, what do you guys make, if you watch it, of the latest series of An American Horror Story?
Awful. Absolutely hate it.
That was decisive.
Thank you.
I couldn't stand Cult either. I didn't get through that one or the other one, Roanoke.
I could watch Roanoke.
I could watch Cult. I failed completely with Hotel.
Oh, I loved Hotel.
So did I.
I think it's one of the best ones.
I watched the first episode and... It did the unforgivable. It actually bored me. And if something's boring me, I won't watch it.
That's what I think. It's very boring. I'm feeling now that they've lost the plot, to be honest with you.
They're trying too hard to be clever, I think.
Mm. Mm. They need to stick to what American Horror Story was about in the first place. Like, the sort of original series is what drew people into that and the acting
itself.
They need to go back to that rather than trying to get clever.
Have you seen any of it lately,
No,
George?
You know what? I tend not to... tune into horror shows. I don't know why. It's not because I don't like them. I suppose my taste in horror is kind of old fashioned. So the things I love are the BBC Ghost Stories for Christmas Hammer House of Horror that kind of thing. So I tend to revisit box sets of old things rather than look for the new stuff when it comes to horror, with the exception of iZombie recently.
And that's not really horror,
no,
is it?
No, it's kind of a comic book. It started as a comic
book. Yeah, it's kind of like almost a crime series in some ways, because it's just always solving a crime,
exactly,
isn't
that.
It? There are other series that I've been watching as well that I absolutely love, still in the vein of horror, but I'm almost not sure whether I would really think of this more as thriller. Bates Motel. I've seen that. I've absolutely binged 5 series of that, and I absolutely loved it all the way through.
Yeah.
I just never disappointed.
Freddie Highmore in Bates Motel, he is amazing,
isn't
he? And I don't think he was given enough credit for Bates Motel, because he's moved on to he's in this show called The Good Doctor now, which is very 180 from what the Bates Motel was, but he didn't get enough recognition for it. It's such a good series.
Have you seen it, Robin?
I saw about half the first... No, I saw the entire first season.
Yeah. What was your perception of the mother in the first season? I'm interested about this, and I'll explain why in a minute. What was your perception?
To me, she wasn't... I've read the book by Robert Bloch, and of course I've seen the Hitchcock movies, and I thought, you know, she's not as domineering and as twisted and manipulative and, well...
She's not. I mean, that was my impression of her as well. I thought she was quite sympathetically drawn, to be honest.
Yeah.
And at the end... On season when she's well, we all know, you know, Norman does do his mother in, so I'm not doing any spoilers there. It when she goes, it's at a time when she's the happiest she's ever been, and that is so tragic.
Yeah,
absolutely tragic. And I felt such amazing sympathy for her. But strangely enough, I was talking to a guy on the train the other week when I was going to London, and he thought she was an absolute cow, and he binged the whole thing as well. And I'm like, did we watch the same series here? Mm. You know, I wanted Norman to get killed all the way through. I was like, wish me to get killed.
Oh, you know that's not going to happen. No. But in the book...
Ghosts by the Ghosts. And we'll come back to our chat very shortly, but I'm just going to do a shameless plug for one of our stone tapers. Mm-hmm. George Mann will be in Lincoln this week on Friday at Linden Books. So if you want to meet George, head on along there. What time is it, George?
It's 7 o'clock. I think they've just got very few tickets left. And I'm going to be talking about Hallowedeen, the new novel, sequel to Witchwood from last year. Spooky crime stuff, so perfect for Halloween.
Absolutely perfect. And back to Robin. Hello. You're still with us, I take it. Good.
I am.
So, where were we? Bates Motel. So, yeah, we were thinking that this the character of Norma was, well, goes through phases of being insane and annoying, but also is an incredibly sympathetic character. Are there any other series you've been...
That's where they got it wrong, you see, because it was implied in the film and in the book that what tipped Norman over the edge was that his mother had had an incestuous relationship with him and then found another man, and he killed her out of jealousy.
And that sort of implied that he's obsessed with her, isn't it, all the way through?
Yeah.
But, yes, I realise that. One of the things that I took from this, though, was because it isn't obviously the same, although they did have some tips to the hat, as it were, to the movies... was it just felt like a completely unique and original series to me in many ways, but just in the same universe and the same characters. And I sort of took... You did the suspend disbelief thing for that reason, probably because I just liked it so much anyway. I didn't care that there was these discrepancies, but I do get... But it was such... it was one of those shows that when I finished it, I was really sad there was no more episodes to watch. And that doesn't happen very often, I have to say. So what about other shows? What have you been... watching recently?
I've actually been watching A Discovery of Witches.
I've seen
a couple episodes of that.
Yeah, and I must admit, I went into this thinking this is going to be a bit soppy and it's not going to be my cup of tea. And I'm obsessed with it. It's brilliant. It's the cast are fantastic. Matthew Good. I can't remember the lady's name.
She's Teresa Palmer.
Well done. Australian playing an American in Britain, and she's fantastic in it. And yet, in the first episode, I was a bit, I know this might be a bit on the nose with the way they're talking about themselves as vampires and demons and, you know, and witches. And actually, it's just, it's a love story, but it's very, very well done, I think. You know, lots of sinister stuff going on, central mystery through the heart of it. So, yeah, we're anxiously waiting for Friday night. After my thing at Lindum, I'm going to dash home and watch the next episode with Fiona, so... So that's probably the closest I've come to horror on TV, which is not really horror, but it's got...
It's more of a series in a vein of sort of the originals or Vampire Diaries, would you say? No?
I don't know. It's
more... It's got the love story aspect of it.
And it's I guess it's...
That forbidden love, we should say.
And it's more British than that, because it's all set in Oxford.
I have actually watched the first episode, and I wasn't that smitten with it, really.
I think I've only seen the first and second episode, but I'm really getting sick and tired of the forbidden love stories.
Yeah.
Every single time. Like, I feel like they could have done so much more with that.
Yes.
Not just be between a vampire and a witch. And it's... I just don't know. I think that's a very repetitive storyline to go with. I think she's a great actress.
Has been done before, so
he's
many
a good
times,
actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's getting to the point where I'm just like, I just want something new, where it's just like a good plot, a good storyline, good writing, where there's not necessarily a love interest at the centre of it.
Interesting. Robin, have you caught this by any chance?
No, I haven't. I've gone more old school. Oddly enough, to something that George mentioned earlier, I went and bought the DVD box set of House of Hammer, and I've been really enjoying those.
They're great, aren't they?
They are absolutely fantastic. I mean, so 1980s. It's like watching a historical documentary, the cars and...
Yeah,
good fun.
We've been watching The Goodies.
The Goodies?
We've revisited The Goodies.
Fantastic.
And now a bit of... Monster Mash.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abodes to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guest included Wolfman, Dracula and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drax's a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Boris sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Mash good!
Easy, Igor, you impetuous young boy.
Mash good!
Monster mash!
And that was Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers. I just have to say their names because that is so funny. Anyway, I think that's pretty much all we've got time for, so I'd like to say a huge thank you to George Mann.
Thank you very much.
To Patricia H. Ash, she's not going to say thanks because she's not with us right now. Robin Pearce.
Thank you for having me.
And our guest presenter today, Becky Morgan Phillips.
Thank you for having me on.
And of course to Alex, doing a great job as always, as our wonderful producer. Until next time.
Draw back in fear. I am the mask you wear. It's me.